So November 27th, lecture 27. Happy post-Thanksgiving. I hope you all had an enjoyable Thanksgiving break, got a chance to relax, got some bird or your food of preference in your tummy, whatever. And now we're on the sprint towards the end of the whole thing. If you know any of these students or like the idea of supporting students or engage in entrepreneurial activities, join us in cheering on our finalists during the John S. and Marlene J. Brinzo Center for Entrepreneurship's annual Idea Pitch Competition, which occurs every fall. 10 finalists will pitch their business ideas to a panel of entrepreneur judges. All finalists will win a cash prize. It's this Thursday, 4 to 6 p.m., and there's some free food after a reception. If you're interested, it's in person at the Kiva, and you can register at that website or do the QR code. Support our students. We're not really into evaluating the course yet. I suppose you're saving the best for last. I don't know. So far, 10% of us have bothered. That will get us all 0.05% out of a 0.5% possibility. Let's up the ante a little bit. Let's evaluate the course so we can get everyone a little extra credit, boost people at the end, and do a little better than 10% participation rate. Webbies, that's you too. You're allowed to participate. All right. So here we are, lecture 27 on November 27. Mini test 13, the last of the graded tests, will close tomorrow night at 11:59 p.m. to give you a chance to recover from the Thanksgiving Day blahs. Then we have two lectures this week, two lectures next week, and we be done. Mini test 14 will be a review-only test, so it'll cover lectures 27, 28, 29, 30. It'll open after lecture 30 and give you a chance to study that material using the review test if you like for the upcoming final, as you can see, opening December 11th at 8 a.m. Also, closing this week, extended due to Thanksgiving break, is the extra credits. Oh, no, that's not right. Is the mini test 13 closing tomorrow. I'll get it out in a little bit. And the extra credits will close Wednesday, extended due to Thanksgiving. So do those as well to add a few extra points to your final course grade. Final exam, all this should be almost rote by now. We've done it a couple times, you should know it. It counts for 16% of your course grade. Opens Monday, December 11th at 8 a.m. online. Closes Thursday, December 14th at 6 p.m. And it'll cover lectures 21 to the end of our material, whatever we get done to next week. And the textbook exact ending page, I'll let you know. This is a link to the general final exam schedule for all classes if you needed to find any other course. So you know this stuff, we've said it before, bring your book, bring your notes, bring your ID. There'll be a basic calculator in the exam in case you need it. You know you can't have mini test questions or answers with you. It'll be proctors and proctorio, 50 items, multiple choice exam, 80 minutes standard time, 160 minutes extended time, 16% of your course grade, open book, open notes, just restating the stuff. It's what's covered in mini tests 11 through 13 plus the 14 ungraded review test without any business or marketing of the news. Not too much other stuff new there. Don't have any digital devices even near you during the test. If any of this doesn't work for you, let me know. We'll schedule an in-person exam instead of doing it this way. Don't even give the appearance of looking up and down side to side or over the top of the monitor during the exam, because then it's going to flag you for potentially cheating. It's a whole mess. Any questions on the final exam? I feel like we've done this several times before. Okay, so next year's holiday gift may be AI in your pocket. Smartphones and personal computers are about to get a lot smarter. Will that be a good enough reason to buy a new one? So forecasting consumer behavior, new product introduction. A growing number of major tech companies are betting that it will. Generative artificial intelligence has taken the tech world by storm ever since the public launch of online chat bot ChatGPT. almost a year ago. It seems like it's longer than that. It seems like it's been around longer. Major companies like Microsoft, Google, Amazon, Facebook, parent Meta platforms have already rolled out services enabled by the technology, which can draft emails, create spreadsheets, and even allow non-programmers to produce workable computer code. So these are all, of course, service innovations, new things that AI can do for us. The rub is that most of these services are designed for business users and require constant connection to powerful cloud networks. So the next step is devices like smartphones and PCs that can run generative AI algorithms directly on their own hardware. You won't need to be connected to the cloud. A wave of new smartphones and PCs launching next year is expected to feature this capability. So a bit of technology in business, again, new product innovation rolling out. Hopes are already high. Enrique Lords, Chief Executive Officer Hewlett-Packard, said AI PCs next year will start a new cycle of market expansion and refresh, which he thinks will double the overall PC category growth rate over the next 3 years. And PC growth has not been strong as people switch to laptops and just, you know, tablets and what, smartphones. So if this works out for them the way he projects, it's going to be a really good thing for that industry, so corporate growth strategy. The risk, of course, is that on-device AI could turn into another empty hype cycle like 5G did. 5G produced a boost in smartphone sales in 2021. It quickly fizzled due to a lack of compelling new use cases for 5G technology. Such killer apps will be especially necessary with AI-enabled smartphones, given the fact that wireless carriers have no clear reason to subsidize the devices like they did with 5G phones. So we'll see what happens. A smarter smartphone is not going to sell itself. Here's the case for marketing, making sure you're finding value to the consumer so they'll make that switch. Stay tuned. We'll see what happens. How many of you guys contributed to the success of Black Friday sales by buying something on Black Friday? No, two people. All right, well, the rest of the world contributed to Black Friday sales. Black Friday reaches record spend of nearly $10 billion. I assume that wasn't all you. With the inflation rate dropping steadily over the past few months, consumers more freely open their wallets, or rather charge their credit cards, at a record pace on Black Friday. So the impact of one of our crest factors, the economy, on marketing. Backtracking in time a little bit. Crest factors, those factors outside the organization that impact us and our consumers. C stands for? For change is not on the slide. What's outside the firm that impacts us and our consumers? It's C in the crest factors. Not customers, they impact our customers, but thanks for playing, at least. Thank you. Competition, R? Regulatory, legal, and political. E, that is on the screen. Economy, S. Social, and T, technology. We almost got it. You know, it's like a whole group thing. We'll crowdsource our knowledge at the end. So this is one of those crest factors, the economy impacting consumers in our business. According to Adobe Analytics, a record $9.8 billion was spent Friday, traditionally the day retailers enter the black, you know, make money, and a bellwether for holiday sales. That's up 7.5% in the U.S. year over year. In October 2022, the U.S. inflation rate sat at 7.75%. Last month, it was half that, 3.24%. The major growth driver of Black Friday online sales was electronics, up 152%. Versus daily sales for October. Smartwatches, TVs, and audio equipment were the top items being purchased, so we're seeing consumers' behavior. According to Adobe's Digital Price Index, the level of consumer spend was driven by new demand rather than just by higher prices, so that big number isn't just because prices were higher. With e-commerce outlets dropping prices consecutively for 14 months, down 6% year over year. So price elasticity and demand, we assume there's some relationship between dropping prices and increased purchases. Adobe said it expected another $10 billion to be spent over this last weekend in front of today, in front of Cyber Monday, which it believes will be the biggest online shopping day of the year, predicting a record spend of $12 billion, up 5.4% year on year. So we're doing a little sales forecasting. We'll have to check back and see how accurate they are. To remain competitive, retailers must position sales and promotions throughout the season and consider personalized deals that are tailored to consumers' preferences, says Brittany Steiger, retail and e-commerce analyst at Mintel. So we're seeing retail strategies, we're seeing providing consumer value. Our research shows that the most popular retail promotions are percent off discounts, buy one, get one deals, gift card offers, and free gifts with the purchase. So these are all sales promotions, things we'll talk about a little bit in class in the marketing mix. Advertising remains the main weapon in every brand's armory, with TikTok and Instagram as the most popular channels for consumer purchase inspiration. So social media and marketing. So it's all out there in the real world. Stuff we talk about here reflects what's going on in the real world. On to lecture notes, page 243, chapter 18, page 502 in the textbook, where we pick up with thinking about integrated marketing communications. We had left off at a little awkward place. I don't think I'm going to go ahead and bother with this slide, but we were talking about different things that advertising does through the product lifecycle, and this was to remind people to buy our products. We saw this little ad from Coke, and I don't think we're going to bother with Pine Sol today. So what we're talking about here, integrated marketing communication. So broadly speaking, communication is the process of conveying a message to others. All marketers, when they put together their ad or their website or whatever they're trying to do, their sales presentation, they think they're communicating. Duh, that's why they're doing it. If only it were that easy. So it sure sounds easy, yeah. So I'm going to show you something. I'm going to convey a message to you. Can you guys see that in the back okay? Yeah, it's clear enough. So, we got it. We know what I'm communicating. You got it? Coolio, that's good. So I'd be really curious what you're reading. How many of us can see it? How many say I have no idea what it's saying? And of course, this is the point. Marketers put together stuff. They say, hey, it's clear. They can see it. I know what it means. How am I doing? You got it? You don't. Why not? Well, it says friends come from far away. Isn't it a happy thing in life? It's from Confucius. Of course, I'm exaggerating what's going on here, but marketers sometimes put out messages in words that they understand, in terms they understand, in images or messages or sounds they understand, and we go, huh? They don't get the idea of communication adequately. So let's think about the key elements of communication. The source of the communication in our domain. Well, what's the source of most communications we'd be thinking about in this class? What's the source? Where do they come from? Well, that's where we're going to view it, but where do they come from? Who creates them? A wild guess about who's doing the advertising. Anybody? Gosh. You guys have any idea who might be doing the advertising? Who? A company, yes. The marketer, the advertiser. That's not the hardest question. It stumps people. All right, so the source of the communication is the company, the marketer, the advertiser, yeah? So it's a person, a group, or an organization with a meaning that it intends to share with an audience. So it could be not-for-profit organizations, for-profit organizations, government organizations, political organizations. Could be a salesperson wanting to communicate one-on-one with a customer in a sales call. Or it could be an organization wanting to communicate with thousands of people all at one time. All of this represents the potential source of the communication, all right? The receiver of the communication. What do you suppose we hope the receiver is? The consumer! Thank you, the consumer, yeah? So it's the person or the group or the organization that receives and understands, here we're using fancy language, decodes, a communication. It may be that the actual receiver of your message, the actual audience, and the intended audience are not identical. Do you remember our Clearasil ad, which a whole bunch of the audience felt was inappropriate, nasty, and Clearasil users got it. They thought it was funny. Sometimes our ad reaches an audience we don't intend it for. So our message may not reach our intended audience at all. Bad choice of media, bad choice of channel, or it may be received by our audience and by others that we did not intend to reach, causing problems at times because that audience does not like our particular message that we only intended for our people over here. Encoding of the message. This is the coding of a message into the signs and signals that represent the ideas and concepts of the communication. It includes sensory stimuli, such as visual. What are the words? What are the symbols? What are the images that you're using? You're going to another culture. Are people dressed appropriately? Should men be shown with women? Should children be involved? Is the imagery what it should be to communicate to that a group of people? The sounds, the spoken word, the sound effects, the music that you're using. And of course, depending on the environment, the scents. Is the fragrance convey the message? These have to be done carefully with a good understanding of the consumer and what they mean to the consumer. Advice from a famous marketer, David Ogilvy, who created a major ad firm in the day. Talk to your audience the same way you would talk to a close friend that's sitting in the chair in front of you. Don't address your readers as though they were gathered together in a stadium. When people read your advertisement, read your copy, they're alone. Pretend you're writing to each of them a letter with the information you want to convey. One view of the world, one view of how to encode the message. The message is what's sent after it's been encoded, hopefully with your meaning, through some channel of communication from a source, the advertiser, the firm, the marketer, to a receiver. The channel of communication is the medium that we use to convey the message from the source to the audience. So these are things like the internet, television, radio, print, newspapers, mail, billboards, salespeople. Obviously, you have to understand the media preference habits of your audience in order to reach them. Do they read newspapers? Do they read magazines? Do they drive by the billboard that you're considering? If not, then the message doesn't reach the intended audience. You pick the wrong internet site. The wrong channel then will not reach the intended audience. You're on X, formerly known as Twitter. They're in Instagram. Whoops, wasted effort. You're listening to country music. You're on rock. Whoops, wasted effort. So you have to understand the media exposure habits of your own target audience. So let's imagine this is the image of your target audience. How would you describe this particular target market, this particular target audience? Older, mature individuals, or as I call them, kids, but I understand what you're saying. So how do you imagine you might reach this target audience? Yeah. What kind?
Channel TV commercials.
Channel TV commercials that they're still watching from the old day, maybe on the networks, perhaps, yeah. If you have print, you probably want really nice big print for them to see. Don't want to make sentences too complicated to appeal to them. Here, what do we got as a different audience? Family-oriented sort of thing. You probably wouldn't be in the same channel of communication. Okay, so who your target audience is should influence the channel of communication you send and the message itself. Decoding of the message. The decoding process is used by the receivers, hopefully your target audience, to convert the signs and symbols into concepts, ideas, and meaning. Hopefully you pre-tested that ad, that tweet, X. What's it called now? It's no longer a tweet. Is it an X? What is it now? Anyhow, that message you're sending out, to know how they're going to decode it, to know they aren't going to be puzzled. Unfortunately, rarely does the audience get the exact same meaning as you intended. But you should at least pretest it to have some idea of what meaning they're getting out of it. I've said before, 100 years ago, I worked for an appliance company. Microwaves was still a new idea. I don't know if I shared this particular ad concept they came out. They were trying to show how roomy the microwave they had was. So they came up with this advertisement, and a guy's head is inside the microwave, and he's looking around, did I ever share this? The point was, of course, to see, oh, how roomy it is in here. But this was in the day that people were still concerned about microwaves poisoning them, microwaves giving them radiation, etc. I always wondered exactly what message those concerned consumers were getting out of this guy's head inside a microwave. I'm not sure if the company tested that or not. All right, so it's not what you think, marketer, advertiser. It's what they think. And you got to constantly remind yourself of that. You think they got that first page that I showed you because you know what it says. They don't. One of the things that causes a problem is when you do not have what's called a shared field of experience. Effective communication requires that the sender and the receiver have shared knowledge and understanding of words and symbols and culture and their meaning. And when you don't understand your audience's field of experience, you end up talking to them ineffectively. So without the overlapping fields of experience, communication is likely to be ineffective and misinterpreted. You're using technical terms that they don't understand. You're using imagery, and they're scratching their head. What is that? You're using inappropriate spokespeople. They just shake their head that you're not talking to me. So you have to have overlapping fields of experience. Even when you're doing a good job, unfortunately, there's noise in the system. Noise is anything that reduces the clarity or the accuracy or the effectiveness of that communication. There's lots of sources of noise. For example, problem with the medium you're using. In the old days of terrestrial radio, there could be static. In the new days, how many of you guys have Sirius or satellite radio? Not too many. You ever drive along suddenly the satellite cuts out, blank? What if that's just as I'm getting my high-paid message across to you? Oops, that would be considered noise. You go to an internet or a website, it's down or loads so slow you leave. Not good. The ad is printed, but it's off. There's a mistake in the price, the location, the time. You were looking for beautiful color and it's offset wrong. All these things are types of noise you could run into. I remember the moonwalking bear where I misdirected you to count the throws instead of looking at the moonwalking bear itself. People just didn't see it. That would be noise. You're focused on the wrong thing. Also, you can have problems with the encoding of the message. The encoder, the ad agency, doesn't really get the basic idea that we want to send. And so they put a guy's head inside a microwave. When people are concerned about microwaves, that isn't really what we're hoping for. Or when you chose the inappropriate symbols, you use the wrong word, the wrong music, the wrong spokesperson, use language that's too technical or too simple. All of this causes problems with your intended receiver getting the information you want. Or you can have problems with the receiver themselves. You're sending your message out to a receiver that audience that really doesn't want to hear it. It's unpleasant for them. It's unwanted for them. So the receiver consciously or unconsciously blocks all or part of the message out. That's not going to allow the message to get through very well. You should have known about that and phrased it in a different way. The response is the impact that it has on the receiver. And if you go back to our model of consumer behavior, you'll see some of the things we expect it to impact. If our message does a good job, we're hoping that it will come and do things like impact consumers' beliefs about our product or about the competition, their attitudes, favorable or unfavorable feelings about our product, and their purchase intention leading to choice. So it's going to impact the consumer's knowledge, reflected in their beliefs, their attitudes, favorable or unfavorable feelings about our message, about our product, about our idea, and of course, our behaviors. Buying the product, buying the service. And your particular ad may have a goal only to affect knowledge, only to affect attitudes, or only to affect behavior, or all three. If it's done right, you may have the effect you want. Feedback, this is the sender's interpretation of the response, which indicates whether the message was decoded and understood by the receiver as it was intended. And so often that's going to be in the form of a purchase or not, but also could be in terms of your measurement of their changing beliefs, your measurement of their changing attitudes. And so here it is all put together. We have the source, a message that's being encoded, sent out through a channel of communication, often with noise involved. We get decoding, and hopefully all this is encoded with overlapping fields of experience. The receiver gets the message, interprets the message, and we get some response, hopefully the one we're hoping for. So how do we do this? How do we get this communication going? Well, we have a variety of tools in the marketing mix, in the promotion mix. We can do it through advertising, public relations, sales promotion, personal selling, and direct marketing. So let's take a peek at some of these to see what we think they are. Well, those are the tools. We're going to bring them all together through integrated marketing communication, or IMC. That's the concept of designing these communication programs that coordinate all the promotional activities, the ones we just talked about, advertising, personal selling, sales promotion, public relations, direct marketing, to provide a consistent message across all audiences. Think back to the early days we chatted, the abbreviated definition of marketing, the discovery and satisfaction of consumer needs, wants, and desires at a profit through an integrated effort of the firm. Things have to all send the same image, the same message, work the same way. And when they don't, people don't know what you're about. They don't know who you are. They know what you represent. They don't know why they should buy from you. So why do we have this need for integrated marketing communication? Well, as you know, as a consumer, you're bombarded with commercial messages. Don't ever bother to try to count the number of messages you see a day, or at least scan through a day, between what's on your smartphone, what's in your radio, what's on your streaming whatever. Hundreds or thousands of commercials a day come at you. Even for one company, you may see a variety of commercials in a day about them. To the consumer, that variety of messages become a single message about the company. And if those messages are not integrated, if the website doesn't carry the same meaning as their ad, as their tweet, if they're not integrated, the various messages create a confusing and a mixed image in the consumer's mind, not what we want, and not how we get people to buy our product. I talked about this a while ago in one of my executive MBA classes, and the guy that I was talking to worked for Sterling Jewelers. It was a little bit ago. The example is a little oldish, but it's a great example that he shared with me about an integrated communication, marketing communication message. So, welcome to Sterling Jewelers, the largest specialty retail store in the country, with 1,414 stores located in 50 states, including the nationally recognized Kay Jewelers, Jerry the Gallery of Jewelry, named one of the top companies to work for in Northeast Ohio. They were bought out a while ago by Signet Jewelers, so they're a wholly owned subsidiary of Signet, but still operate as Sterling. So they were dealing at the time with an economic slowdown, and they said, hey, given the economic condition, we have to do some new tactics in order to attract people into their stores. At the time, their brands were very, very price point driven. So they decided not just to focus on good, better, best. They wanted to spice up their categories. They came up with new products, including trendy, fashion-forward items at lower price points to pull people into the store. They made some of their timeless looks more affordable for price-sensitive customers. And they expanded their assortment of Livion jewelry, which is a very successful upper-scale line of jewelry. So they jazzed things up a little bit. But their big deal at the time was to come up with a new line, the Open Hearts Collection by Jane Seymour. Does anybody know that mine still. A couple people do, okay? When it rolled out, this was a really big deal, and people really knew still who Jane Seymour was. I'm not sure people still do. And so she had an artsy side to her. She emphasized in her own artwork the theme of love, which fits very nicely with the jewelry store. She was very popular in the day at the time. And so they played off on this popularity and love theme. So they came up with a new line, a new product line, Open Heart Collection. The stores had beautiful new displays for the product. They had informational brochures about Jane and her background and her story and her open heart love for family, friends, and others. They had DVDs playing on continuous loops in the store telling her story. They ran Jane Seymour in a Kay's commercial that appeared in an episode of My Name is Earl. You guys know that show, My Name is Earl? So as I recall, the detail was that the wife was having a dream, and in the dream she was talking to Jane Seymour, I think. And then the commercial that appeared right after that segment was an ad for the Jane Seymour Open Hearts Collection. Hallmark Channel and Kay Jewelers hosted an online sweepstakes. They offered a chance to win one of the Open Hearts by Jane Seymour diamond necklaces. Kay Jewelers placed in-store displays in 909 stores located across the country, featuring tune-in information for the premiere of Dear Prudence, which was current at the time. And they had a press release on top of that. Now that's an integrated marketing communication plan across all the appropriate media, in the stores, in brochures, etc., etc. All right, so we understand a bit about communication. We understand we have to do some sort of promotion. We have to think about elements of getting that done. And of course, one of the things that's going to affect what we can do is our budget. If you are a small company, entrepreneur company, and you don't have a lot of money, one way to get your promotion going is through personal sales, personal selling. It's pretty easy to measure personal sales. You know who you visited. You know if they bought or not. You know what appealed to them. And compared to a major advertising campaign, a national ad campaign, or even a big regional one, it's less expensive. On the other hand, if you're in the happy situation of having a sizable budget, then you have to decide which of those various tools are best for your situation. You have a lot of money, but you don't want to throw it away. Which tools are going to be best for you given your audience? Your objectives will influence your promotion mix. Let's suppose you have a new breakfast cereal and you want to get mass awareness for it. Well, you're probably not going to use personal selling, knocking door to door. Hi, would you like some new cereal? Hi, any new cereal? That's just silly. So you're going to run advertising. Maybe have some sales promotions, coupons, free giveaways, sweepstakes to get attention. Some sort of publicity. This is the newest, healthiest thing in town, and you get the press to pick up on it. Or maybe what you're trying to do is educate consumers about some new mobile phone that came out, maybe one with the new AI capability. There you might use moderate advertising, some sales promotion, but have significant personal selling in your store, in the kiosks at the mall, because people really have to understand what this new AI feature is. So that might influence the a particular promotional mix that you might want to have. If you want to produce immediate sales, probably run advertising, some sort of sales promotion to grab people and pull them in. You know, so people love a deal. They love those two-for-one deals or cents-off deals or some sort of free product when you buy something. Your target audience will influence the mix itself. If you have a really big, broad audience spread across a large geographic area, well, probably advertising and sales promotion to reach those masses. If it's more limited, often in the B2B world where you only have a few hundred firms to deal with, there you're probably going to see more personal selling as opposed to the need for advertising and promotion. I've hinted at geographic distribution. If it's all concentrated in one area, go for personal sales. If it's dispersed, you're probably going to choose advertising to reach all these different places. Also, the stage of the product life cycle. will influence your promotion mix. So here's a new product, Dog Chow. So it's brand new. It's coming out in the marketplace. People don't know about it yet. So we have to inform consumers about it. So we're going to use publicity in veterinary magazines, advertising, Salesforce calling on the people that carry it in this channel of distribution, and sales promotions in the form of free samples to build awareness during the introduction stage of the product life cycle. Let people know it's there. Over time, as it begins to become popular, we're out there, we're growing, other competition is paying attention to whatever our new brand is doing. So now we're trying to persuade people to buy it. We still might need to use personal sales to get our intermediaries in the channel of distribution to carry the product. But now we've got to advertise to differentiate Dog Chow and all of its features from those nasty competitors who are coming in to challenge us as we grow. Maturity? Well, we've been out there for a while. You know we're out there. You've been having us. You've been using us. So here the point is to remind people, remind your advertising. Maybe some sales promotion in the form of discounts and coupons to be sure you're coming back to the family. We don't need as much personal selling. Everybody in the channel already carries us. They like us. They know us. Maybe some direct mail reminders to your loyal customer base. You know, don't forget to buy us when you need some more Dog Chow. And then, of course, the decline stage of the product life cycle. You're probably not spending a lot of money on advertising. So we also see this whole mix being affected by the stage of the product life cycle, which we talked about before. The product itself will influence the promotion mix. Industrial products that are, you know, big, expensive, complex, often will use personal selling, and they'll have some support from ads, some sales promotions, but mostly personal selling. Consumer products are going to vary in terms of their complexity. Durable goods, furniture, cars, tend to use personal selling, although more and more we're seeing people just buy them online, but okay. Convenience goods tend to use advertising and sales promotions, chewing gum, toothpaste, snacks. And if you can get something interesting and new going, both industrial products and consumer products will use public relations to get the word out into the popular press. Seasonal products might use advertising and sales promotion. I overuse the example of cranberries at this time of year. You see the lots of ad for cranberries now and hardly any in May or June. Valentine's Day candy, obviously seasonal. Higher price products usually need personal selling because of the risk that consumers associate with the purchase. Again, though, even people are buying houses sight unseen or through the internet. I'm not sure where their risk tolerance is. Cars, major purchases, they're trusting the internet. I might want to see the house myself first, I'm sorry. So I guess there are some segments that don't follow this traditional approach, but in general, the more expensive the product, the more personal selling is involved. Jewelry, you're just going to trust what they say about it on the internet and you want to see it. We have different approaches to getting our promotion out through the channel. We can either use a pull or a push strategy. A pull strategy involves directing our promotional mix at the ultimate consumers, all the way down at the end of the channel, and encouraging them to ask the retailer for the product. This is a pull strategy. So we run our promotion down mainly to the consumers, and then we hope the consumer is going to say to the retailer, hey, when are you getting that? When are you getting that? The retailer says to the wholesaler, how come we don't have that yet? And the distributor or the manufacturer is now able to get it out. For me, a real life situation 100 years ago, I was a young bachelor, if you can imagine me being a young anything, a young bachelor. And my refrigerator is pretty much filled up with TV dinners. Even today when my wife is away, they're filled up with TV dinners, I guess. But anyhow, so Swanson's was coming up with a new TV dinner, whatever it was, and it sounded really good to me. And I went down to the grocery store, and I asked them week after week, when are we getting the whatever it was dinner? It seemed like the ad was going to me, and they were catching up with it later. Perhaps they were using a pull strategy for this particular product. A push strategy, as you might guess, is the opposite. This is where we, the marketer, direct our promotional mix to the channel members, get their cooperation in ordering and stocking the product. So we run our promotion out to the wholesalers. Hey guys, here's this new product. People are going to want it. We'll give you some co-op dollars if you'll help advertise it down to the retailers, or maybe the same deal to the retailers. So in this case, we're pushing the promotion down the channel of distribution, and then we're hoping, of course, that the product will flow with that promotion to the wholesaler, to the retailer, to the consumer. To develop our overall plan, well, the starting point is, after all, the audience. We are trying to understand and satisfy the consumer's needs, wants, and desires, not our own, not our advertisers. So we need to start with the consumer. Who is your target markets? What do they value? What are their needs, wants, and desires? What are their media exposure habits? Where are we going to reach them? Without that, I don't know what you're doing. Then you're going to specify your particular of your objectives for this promotion. One approach to this is something called the hierarchy of effects model. And it's the sequence that these folks feel stages that a prospective buyer goes through from initial awareness of a product to eventual action, either trying it for the first time or adopting the product. So if you subscribe to this view of the world, what your ads have to do is first build awareness. Nobody buys products they aren't aware of. Okay? Then, having gotten people to be aware that your product is what it is, build interest in it, what its value is, why they might want it. Then get evaluation. It's better than what they're using now. It's better than the competition. Then get them to try it. Maybe you have a sense-off deal. Maybe you have a free sample. Maybe you have a two-for-one deal. And if all goes well, you move on to adoption, their first actual product purchase at full price. You may actually then plan your marketing communications to move people through those stages if that's your view of the world. Whether you have a lot of money or a little money, you still have to decide how to make use of that money. One approach to that is to set your sales, or set your budget for advertising as a percentage of sales. So you're going to allocate your budget for promotion as a percent of past sales or as a percent of forecasted sales. So you say, hey, I'm going to have my marketing be 12% of sales. It's pretty simple. You know what your sales are, and you know what 12% is. So you're able to figure out what your budget should be. And man, when sales are going up, what's going to happen to that ad budget? It's a percentage of sales. What's going to happen when it's going up? Thank you. It's going to go up as well. So yay, things are going great. We got more marketing dollars. We're spending more. Now this is where this part gets me a little crazy. What happens when sales are going down? What happens to your ad budget? It goes down. Now, my understanding is that ad dollars are supposed to drive sales. So if your sales are going down and you're cutting your ad budget, I don't get that logic too good. And studies do show that when economic times are slow, those companies that continue to advertise do better when things pick back up. Anyhow, that's one approach. Another approach is a competitive parity budgeting approach. So here we're going to allocate funds based on the competition. Maybe if we're about the same size as they are, we'll try to match their actual promotion dollars. We're going to set our budget to be the same proportion, perhaps a market share, that we have. It's also called matching competitors, share of market. So that's another way to set your ad budget. It's a little lazy, but I guess you don't have a better way to model things. So whatever they spend, that's what I'll spend. All right. The all-you-can-afford budgeting approach, this is for many small businesses and our entrepreneurs. You're going to allocate as much as you can once you've covered all the other budget items. So you just don't have a lot to play with, so the all-you-can-afford budgeting approach may work for you. Most complicated, I guess, is the objective and task budgeting We're going to allocate funds to promotion by first asking ourselves, what are our promotional objectives? Build awareness, build preference, get them to try the product. Then deciding on what task we need to do to accomplish these objectives, and determining the promotional cost of performing each one of these tasks. So what are your objectives? What would it take to achieve that objective? Build your budget around that. Requires some serious management planning to take that approach. How much do people spend on advertising? Global advertising spend expected to grow by 3.3% in 2023, with inflation driving the increase to reach $728 billion in the US. They look at stronger growth ahead, with the 2024 global advertising market now expected to increase by 4.7% to reach $762.5 billion. And they're projecting further growth of 4% in 2025. Digital advertising is projected to settle in almost consistent incremental growth for 3 years to account for around $3 out of every $5 spent in advertising worldwide. So here we're seeing the forecast total global media ad spend over time. Of course, it's never accurate, but it does give you some sense of what the experts think will be happening over the next several years. In the US, we see, again, digital ad spending surpassed television ad spending for the first time back in 2016. I guess we don't see that, I'm telling you that. And that digital ad spending accounts for over half of all U.S. ad dollars these days. And again, they can continue to see things growing for digital ad spending. In 2022, who were the biggest advertisers in the U.S.? Well, number one, Amazon. In 2022, they got 2021 numbers. They don't have the 2023 numbers yet. Amazon, $10.4 billion. Comcast, $6 billion. P&G, $5 billion. American Express, $4 billion. Down to Walt Disney, Google, Warner Brothers, Verizon, Walmart, and Charter Communication. So those are the folks that we're seeing out there spend a lot of bucks. How much should you spend on your integrated marketing communication plan? Well, one approach is to compare yourself to the industry at large. And this is the idea of calculating your promotion to sales ratio. That is to say, how much bang for the buck do you get? For every dollar of promotion you spend, how many dollars of sales are you getting? So the promotion to sales ratio is your total promotion expenditures divided by your total sales dollars times 100. And whatever that ratio turns out to be, look it up in some industry publication to see how your ratio looks compared to the rest of the industry. If your ratio is lower than the industry, you're doing better than they are. You're getting more dollars in revenue for every dollar you spend in promotion than they are. A lower ratio, it's saying what I'm saying. Lower ratio means you're getting more bang for your buck, more sales for your promotional bucks than is the competition. So that gives you some sense of how effective your advertising is compared to the competition. In doing all of this, we're going to pick from our promotional tools. We're going to pick from advertising, personal selling, sales promotion, public relations, and direct marketing, and build that communication package in a integrated fashion. So, how are you going to integrate advertising, personal selling, sales promotion, public relations, direct marketing? Depends on what you're promoting, what the expectations and preferences of your potential customers are, the general marketing conditions, and of course, the budget, things we just were talking about. And there's no one answer for that. There's no single approach. You're going to use your expertise, your experience, your art. So there's no one best way to integrate these things. And it'll change over time because your product moves to the different life cycle, your consumers change their mind, the market conditions change, competition changes. So after doing that, you're going to design and schedule the program, execute and assess the program, and hopefully have success. So this chapter is integrated marketing communication and direct marketing. So let's talk about direct marketing. Direct marketing is a promotion alternative that uses direct communication with consumers to generate a response in the form of an order, a request for further information, or a visit to a website or a retail outlet. Direct marketing's big deal is that there is a call for response, a call to action that's trackable and measurable. They don't much care about your beliefs. They don't much care about your attitude. What they care about is, did you do what they wanted you to do? Did you go to their website? Did you ask for information? Did you place an order? Forget about that attitude stuff. We can't see it. There's a variety of types of direct marketing out there. The most common forms are internet marketing, face-to-face selling, direct mail, catalogs, telemarketing, direct response advertising, kiosk marketing, and enhanced internet in direct marketing during the COVID-10 era, COVID, a Cyber Monday sale. And not where I wanted to be. My clicks aren't always current. Anyhow, so you might engage in any one of these if your particular philosophy of how to get people to buy your product is more in this direct domain. Oh, I did finally take a picture of stuff. I told you that catalogs are a real thing. Direct marketing is a real thing. And my wife is a pretty good example of that. That wasn't one day, but I think it might have been a month when she was away. And some of the stuff is pretty upscale. So there's a boatload of catalogs that our house receives. Quite impressive. And people, companies believe in direct marketing to the consumer. Response rates for direct marketing approaches vary quite a bit. So you'd want to take those into account. You can see that the average response rate to direct mail is 2.1%, to catalogs 2.2%, email only 0.48%, telephone, if you can get through, 2.5%. Inserts, those things inside your Sunday newspaper that fall on the floor and you just throw them away, 0.11%, and newspaper and magazine ads, 0.13%. But as you think about the average response rate, you want to take into account some of these other columns, the cost per thousand to do this, the revenue per thousand, the cost per order, the average order value, and the promotion cost percent. So for example, email is really low in cost per order that you get at $3.88. And so its promotion cost is quite low at 4.7%. Email is still very popular among B2B marketers, and indeed in some cases among B2C marketers. Inserts, the response is so low, all those things falling out of your newspaper, that the low cost really doesn't matter that much. Although you know that your Sunday papers still seem to have a lot of inserts in it. It's not clear to me 100% how much they're getting out of it. Prints, low promotional percentage at 5.5%, is driven by its high average order value. A lot of print magazine products include high-value financial service ads. They produce a high order value once they go through. Telephone, highest cost per order, because, of course, it takes a lot of effort to get a phone call through to a consumer. Here's the cost of advertising nationally by medium. So national TV advertising can run between $63,000, I don't know where that is, for the setup, up to $8 million. The average cost of approximately $342,000 per 30-second spot. And if you honor it ongoing, you got the cost of media, the ad agency hourly rates. National magazines set up between $500 and $400,000. About $250,000 per ad. So if you can run a bunch of those, you better have a pretty good budget. National newspaper advertising setup is between 11 dollars, and wow, $1.4 million to set up a national newspaper ad. The average is about $113,000 per ad, and a direct mail cost as low as $50 up to $7,200, approximately $51.40 per order. So a lot of folks like the idea of direct mail advertising. These are not all testable, but there's telemarketing, search engine optimization on your internet site, pay-per-click marketing, email marketing, and web content marketing is all out there for you. So what is the value of direct marketing? Direct marketing's focus is on getting you to do something. So direct marketing's can result in actual orders, direct orders. Or if it's your point, you want people to get to your website, ask for more information. If they're that interested, they're a lead. You may be able to sell them the product. They downloaded that white paper just like you wanted them to. Email's the winner for lead generation. It produces the highest response rate at a fraction of the cost of all these other approaches to getting people to respond to you. Inserts and direct mail, as we talked about, have the lowest rate of conversion of leads to sales. Why? A bunch of it just ends up on the floor and people throw it away. Traffic generation, you can use direct marketing to get people into your bricks and mortar store. Here's a sales promotion. Here's just an outright sale. Here's a special event we're going to have. I'm as cynical as the next guy about direct marketing stuff. But a while ago, I got something that was an insert in my Sunday newspaper, and it caught my attention. It was interesting enough to look at. It was it came a 5 1/4 and 7 1/4 inch sealed green envelope, had 6 words of copy on the front, a special invitation just for you. It was an upscale piece. It stood out as out of place among all the rest of the junk that was in my Sunday paper. When you opened it up, it's hard to tell here, but this was an upscale glossy invitation, white copy reversed on a silver background. It almost looked like, I don't know, a wedding invitation or something. And it was from the folks over at DirecTV. Inside the invitation, they had all this news, all this stuff. And it included direct calls to action. Don't miss your chance to get the best entertainment and the best savings. Call the number to start enjoying our package. Call now. Very much a direct marketing piece. I didn't, in fact, do it because I wasn't interested in it. But you can see that its focus isn't, hey, we're nice. Hey, like us. Hey, there's emotional appeal. Here, it's do it. Direct mail marketing. So there's an entity out there that can help you think about direct mail, direct marketing in general. Data here is broken down by channel, industry, and business model. Catalog, non-catalog, telemarketing, email, internet display, advertising, search engine marketing, social networking sites, internet, other, mobile, television, radio, magazines, newspaper, insert, other, across 52 major groups, 51 geographic areas, 4 intended purpose categories that we talked about, direct order, lead generation, retail purchase, and fundraising, either to B2B or B2C. So they're out there to help you if this is the approach you want to take. For those who want to know more, I mentioned before David Ogilvie, a true direct marketing individual. He founded the Ogilvie Agency quite a while ago, led the world of advertising with his scientific research on the market and consumers. He said, in the advertising community today, there are two worlds, the direct response advertising, the direct marketing world, and the world of general advertising. These two worlds are on a collision course. The general advertiser and their agencies know almost nothing for sure because they're wasting their time on attitudes and beliefs and feelings and emotions. In direct response advertising, I see knowledge in reality. I know whether or not you did what I wanted you to do. In general advertising, I see ignorance. So he's got a little YouTube piece out there if that's interesting. There's actually an entity out there to help you again think about this, the Direct Marketing Association, if you're interested in knowing more. So that's a bit about integrated marketing, communication, and direct marketing, chapter 18. Now we're going to dig into the details of these elements of the promotion mix. Some of the details across these particular tools become a bit repetitive. We start talking about budget and budget approaches. So in some cases, I'm going to say we sort of saw that before. It's just the way the material's laid out. So advertising, sales promotion, and public relations. Here what I'm doing is bolding things that will differentiate this tool from other tools we're going to talk about. So advertising is any paid form, bolded because there are others that are not paid, any paid form of non-personal, bolded because others are personal, communication about an organization, a good, a service, or an idea, by, bolded one more time because it's going to differentiate, and identified sponsors. So these three things, paid, non-personal, identified sponsor, help differentiate advertising from our other tools that we're going to talk about. Not too surprising, some types of ads advertise products. We're using this to promote a product or a service's use, features, and or benefits. If it's a brand new product, we use pioneering or informational advertising to get people to know about this new thing we're rolling out. We use pioneering advertising for the product or service in the introductory stage of the product life cycle. And we're going to inform the target market that we exist, we're here, we're a brand you should pay attention to. So the existence of the new brand, what the thing is, what the thing does, is what we're trying to do here, trying to get people to know about whatever it is we're selling. Also, in case they're interested, where they can buy it. Here's an introductory ad for, at the time, what was a new Oreo creation. After going through hundreds of thousands of submissions of Oreo's hashtag My Oreo Creation contest, the cookie giant has finally decided on three new flavors, Piña Colada, Cherry Cola, and Kettle Corn. This was a teaser ad that introduced consumers to these three new exciting products to make them aware of their existence. Introducing My Way, a new feminine fragrance that combines consciously sourced ingredients from around the world in a blend of woody and floral notes, created for the open-minded, curious, and authentic woman who's ready to broaden her horizons. My Way by Giorgio Armani. Here's a new feature of your toothpaste you never thought about. It makes you look younger. It's new. It introduces a new attribute or benefit. Your toothpaste is age-defying. Her smile, age-defying because she uses Arm & Hammer toothpaste. Competitive advertising or persuasive advertising has a different objective. What it's going to try to do is point out your brand's special features, special advantages, special benefits relative to other brands. And if I can convince you that my special features, special advantages, special benefits are better than what you're already doing or what's already out there, maybe I'll get you to buy my product. A particular type of competitive advertising is comparative advertising, where we are going to directly compare our product to the competition, not in a general sense. In this case, the ad is going to show our brand strengths relative to another brand on specific attributes. The more direct, the more of a comparison ad it is. I love this set of ads when they came out. They're getting a little old, but because I like them, you have to suffer through them again. So Mac versus PC in the day doing a comparison ad.
Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC. You know, we use a lot of the same kinds of programs.
Yeah, like Microsoft Office.
But we retain a lot of what makes us us.
You should see what this guy can do with a spreadsheet. It's insane.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah, and he knows that I'm better at life stuff, like music, pictures, movies, stuff like that.
What exactly do you mean by better?
By better, I mean making a website or photo book is easy for me, and for you, it's not.
Oh, that kind of better.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the other kind.
What other kind?
And so pretty clearly they're doing a direct comparison for the audience on direct benefits, making the point that one brand is better than the other. Coke versus Pepsi is often doing a direct one-on-one comparison. Buying a soda. Ah, just like Coke. Really like Coke. Got a couple of them. Wait a second. Excuse me, he really likes Pepsi because it's left on the ground. So again, sort of a direct comparison, one to the other. Reminder advertising, we're mature, the product life cycle. Used to remind consumers about an established brand's uses, characteristics, benefits. We're not going to learn anything new in our reminder advertising. It's common in the mature stage of the product life cycle, yeah? So in this little ad coming up, we're not going to learn a thing new about the product.
This is the Pepsi that your father drank, and his father drank before he met your grandmother. This is the Pepsi for this model, and his mom. Hi, Cindy. Oh, hi, Brittany. Have you met Uncle Drew? This is the Pepsi that's back from the future, and back for one last ride. This is the first Pepsi on the moon.
What?
No.
Fine. This is the Pepsi for moonwalkers. This is the Pepsi for every generation.
Okay, we're not comparing it to the competition here. We're not comparing it to Coke. We're just saying, hey, we've been around a long time. We've been here with everybody. We're here for you and your generation as well. Reinforcement advertising helps when consumers have doubts about their purchases. Do you remember the idea of post-purchase dissonance? So they just aren't sure if they made the right choice. So this advertising assures them they've made the right choice, and or it tells them how to get the most satisfaction from it. When we talked about this before, I used the, I think, silly example, but true. You buy a new iron, and it tells you, congratulations on buying one of the finest irons in the world. Do not iron clothes while still on body. It's a real thing, and you won't be satisfied if you do that. So we're trying to reduce dissonance. I've talked before, I think, about my daughter and wife shopping at Coach Bags to buy a new purse, getting a handwritten note congratulating them on the fantastic choice they made because they're expensive. They want to reduce any dissonance that you have. So marketers are aware of that. Institutional advertisements focus on promoting the benefits, the ideas, the philosophies of the business or entire industry to enhance or sometimes repair their reputation rather than selling a particular product or a particular service. Since institutional advertising attempts to build a positive image, it's closely related to things like public relations, image building things. Sometimes we see it called corporate advertising. Comes in different flavors, advocacy for a particular position, a particular idea, pioneering, something new in the industry, competitive, and reminder. So PETA is often out there with an idea. They're not selling you a product or a service. They're trying to promote a particular philosophy.
Here. And they're steering you wrong. Listen now.
What the hell?
Because I don't have long. Our
sweet backside.
Would like to stay together. We don't want to be your leather.
Won't you show me some love? Don't you make me kid glove. Or a jacket or a shoe. Because my skin ain't for you. Do I make myself clear? Keep your hands off my rear.
So we're not selling the product. We're promoting a particular philosophy, a particular idea. Here's PETA doing TikTok ad in the digital age, staying up with stuff.
What's a scam that's become so normalized that we don't even realize it's a scam anymore?
You know what they tell you as a kid? That you need to drink cow's milk to have good calcium? Not only is cow's milk not meant for human consumption, many people, including children, actually struggle to digest it and develop lactose intolerance. And besides humans, no species drinks milk beyond infancy or drinks the milk of another species. Oh, and by the way, By consuming cow's milk, you support cruelty to cows and help destroy the environment. Try vegan milk. It's better. In every way. Trust us.
So, trust your influencer. PETA's mission statement is that animals are not ours to experiment on, eat, wear, or use for entertainment or abuse in any other way. And here we have advocacy for their philosophy by influencers. Here we are demanding big corporations do their part to end plastic pollution. Greenpeace is the advocacy group here. Demand big corporations do their part to end plastic pollution. Take action. Tell Starbucks, don't trash our planet. Take action. Not selling your product, trying to promote an idea, a philosophy. Free us to our leaders. Free us from our addiction to oil. From $4 a gallon gas, $4.39 a dollar gas, $4.61 a dollar gas. Save our economy. Save us from climate crisis. Give us truly clean energy. Use the wind. Use the sun. We demand that we use them. We demand that we repower America. There is a solution. There is no time to waste. We, the American people, demand a better future. Give us a 100% clean electricity within 10 years. Join we today. All right. Developing the advertising promotion. Well, now this is where we get a little repetitive with other things we talked about, like the integrated marketing plan itself. Identify the target audience. You can't develop good communication without knowing your target audience. And we just talked about this. To communicate effectively, you have to have overlapping fields of experience with your target audience. We need to be sure we understand the audience. We know who they are. We know their values, their attitudes, their beliefs, their lifestyles, so we can communicate effectively with them. So understanding the consumer is key to developing a successful ad program. You would think, I'd get tired of saying it, I do, and you would think it'd be unnecessary to say it over and over again, but it isn't. Businesses, marketers, advertisers, forget about the consumer. They get caught up in the ad itself. Ooh, isn't this cool? How about the consumer? All right. I see two people got bored. I'm done. See you next time.